Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Build Shop Podcast. I am one half of your hosting crew, Ryan Barath, and my other half is joining me this evening. Mike, how's it going?
RB, I'm great. Yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing quite good. You know, it was just finished off plowing back a pizza.
Love
homemade,
it.
Of course. So I'm cooking now. I'm ready to go. How about yourself?
It's been a busy weekend. Some golf in the mix. It's been good. It's nice to, you know, lower the weekend down with a little podcast and get into the week. Busy week coming up for everyone on all fronts. So it's exciting.
Everything's busy. I know I've got an event coming up this week for some new product that's coming out. We got a lot of stuff going on with the channel. Just, you know, we're doing this right now. To the new listeners as well who followed along, I know if you haven't checked it out yet, go to our YouTube channel. We've got this amazing, unbelievable giveaway, which includes golf with Ian and Matt from the channel. If you follow along there at Pinehurst of all places.
So
basically food, drink, golf, everything's covered except traveling to get there, which is noted in the contest. We'd like to mention that. And there's a lot of different ways to enter. So if you go to the YouTube channel, you can find that contest link video. And in the bottom there, it'll take you to a landing page where you can figure out all the ways to enter, and subscribing to the podcast is one of them. And you know, we've noticed a little bit of a tick this week in the people who have listened. So thank you to everyone who has followed along and joined us here, where we, you know, talk everything golf with a little bit of club building thrown in as well. And let's get right to it, Mike. We had a lot going on in golf this weekend. The Women's Scottish Open, we had KFT Finals, we had a six-way playoff on the PGA Tour, and we had the USAM. Like we had a lot going on. So what did you catch? What didn't you catch? Obviously, you're playing a lot of golf. You probably didn't catch all of it.
Yeah, I've been keeping an eye out on probably more USAM this week. One, I knew a guy who was playing in it, Garrett Rank. So followed his kind of stats around the week. Didn't make it to the match play. He was in a playoff himself. I think he was in like a 5-way playoff, like, or 10-way playoff. I don't even know how many playoffs it was, but anyways, he was in that. And it's always cool to see a course that you've played before on TV. So Oakmont was looking in pristine conditions, and fingers crossed I am walking those fairways mid-September. But I kept an eye on the USAM. I like the AM stuff. I think it's always cool to see the who's up and coming. And, you know, that tournament, you don't just win that like an AJGA event or CJGA event. That's a major in its own right. And, you know, it's pretty impressive. So course was in good shape. Players were good. It's always just fun golf to watch.
I always think it's something that's really interesting is the, like a lot of the players, they don't wear pants. I know it's like a little kind of like funky detail thing, but no ropes in reality. I don't think there's really any ropes around the golf course. So I know I saw some images from the final green. You've got the way players kind of line up and kind of wander around. I've always thought that's like a really interesting element of most of amateur golf, because if you go to an event, and I know most people think of events, they think of the PGA Tour, but if you go to a lot of different live golf events, there are no ropes. You're just kind of walking around. And I think it's a fun way to experience because you get to see shots from different angles. You're not kind of forced into one side or the other side or whatever it is. So as far as amateur events go, yeah, the USAM is way up there. I actually didn't catch a lot of it. I was following along. So, you know, kudos to the winner.
Yeah.
But it is like, it's one of those things too, like for myself, I didn't see any of the golf today. I know there was some coverage issues going back and forth. Because I turned it on at one point and it was like, it was just starting on television. Then I looked, checked my phone. I'm like, there's like three holes left for like the people coming down the stretch. Like, what is going on with this tape? Who's watching sports on tape delay?
I think I'm probably making this up, but I was at a live sporting event today and I opened PGA Tour app to see what the scores were. And I was like, oh, you know, Adam Scott's tied for first. He hasn't started his fourth round. And that was at like 3 o'clock, but at like 3 o'clock he was finished and they were going into this playoff. So I think weather was rolling into that area. I think there's like a tropical storm just off the coast. So maybe they played that early or the guys wanted to leave early to get to the next playoff spot. But I don't know. It was, it's an interesting, when golf finishes early, it doesn't feel like a Sunday.
It's, I think it's Fred. I think it's like Hurricane or like Tropical Storm Fred. I think it's the named it. So hopefully I think I'm correct on that. I think I remember seeing that. I know they get all kinds of names, but yeah, there was definitely weather and it was crazy. Like 6-way playoff. I the only thing I was trying to figure out was like, wait, there's going to be this massive playoff. Like I want to watch just the playoff, but I didn't see any of it earlier because it started so early. And I will say though, Mike, I know you are one who is childless. And is that I love when golf ends at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon because like 6 to 7 is kids dinner time and bedtime and brush teeth and all those things. And it's like, I'm going to miss all of this. Yeah. You're like fighting with a toddler, which I'm not going to play. It's just kind of one of those things. And that's why I always like the Open Championship because it does finish a little bit early.
I am one that cannot watch sports PVR'd either. PVR'd, for those who don't know what PVR is you can record live TV and watch it later on. Other than you get to skip through commercials, I cannot watch a live sporting event. Obviously, we're all on social and stuff, so the minute something goes on sporting-wise, we're going to find out within a second. So it's tough. Like I can't remember what I was trying to watch a couple of weeks ago. I was like a Jays game. I was like, this is useless. I already know they've won. I don't need to watch it now. I do watch racing live on a Sunday, recorded. So once I'm home from the golf course, it's religiously watched that without looking at my phone, but it's tough.
I know. I'm someone where if it's a certain event, like F1, for example, right? I remember recording it. My wife and I recorded a race about a month ago. And she spent all Sunday not on her phone because she knew if she looked at it, she was going to find something out and she wanted to watch it, quote unquote, live.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, my job is social media. So I'm like looking at social. Exactly. I'm like, it's not going to bug me to know who wins because it's just one element of the race. Like you got players fighting just to get into points. Was there any, was there any issues with the race? Like as far as any crashes or anything like that? So like whoever wins is just like not really the case in racing. So like I've definitely done that, but to like put on a hockey game in PVR, I'm like, I'm going to just look at the score and the box score and like be done with it. Right.
Yeah.
So, it is one of those things, but anyways, we had a playoff. Kevin Kisner won on the PGA Tour. Also Ryan O'Toole won the Ladies Scottish Open. Women's Scottish Open, and next week, this coming week now, is Carnoustie the Women's British Open, which I'm super pumped to watch that.
So good.
Kisner won, and it leads to the question, Mike, we got to ask, because we're going to talk about his clubs in a minute, because he's got some funky stuff going on there. Is he now a Ryder Cupper?
I mean, I think, what did he play in the 2018 Ryder Cup in Paris?
I think so.
If it wasn't 18, it was 16 at Hazeltine National, however the heck you say that. Pretty sure he was there. I mean, Kiz, to me, obviously, always thought he was, you know, a funny guy and, you know, always liked to have a laugh. His interviews are great. You know, this ain't no hobby, I think is the best line in the golf industry. The Barstool boys are good friends with him. I know they pump him up a lot. So they've really shown the behind the scenes of Kisner's life, which I think is great. Even Scratch Golf did a thing where they went to his home club and he just seems like a guy you'd want to hang around with. So as Captain Stricker is looking for picks and stuff like that, I mean, he'd got to bring great atmosphere to a team and, you know, the guy can play. I mean, he hit his shot on the last, the playoff hole. I think he stuck to like 3 feet. So the guy's got, you know, some balls to play some wicked golf. And, I just think in a team room, team atmosphere, he'd be perfect. I don't know how well he did in whatever Ryder Cup he played in. Maybe it wasn't a Ryder Cup, but if it, whatever team event it was, I don't know what his record is, but as a person, I think he'd be great.
Yeah. So while you're talking there, he played on the 2017 President's Cup.
Right. Okay.
And then what else we got here? He did. And see, this is where I was thinking, because this is where my mind immediately went to. It was like, he did win the match play.
Right.
And he's a guy who's very well known for his ball striking. So that's something they were like, even if you're not a longer player, you put a lot of pressure on people. Or I think of Edward, Molinari, right? Like not a bomber by any means, but in the Ryder Cup, if you're a good ball striker and you're hitting first into greens, you put a lot of pressure on people, right? Like that's a big thing there. Speaking to the scratch episode that they did with at Palmetto when he was around there, I know I think you can go and find it. I know there's like an interview about it. They were racing carts around and like just having a good time. I know he got a little bit of trouble from the club actually after the video came out, which I just thought was kind of funny because he's like, yeah, I couldn't play for like 2 weeks or something. Which I know it's just kind of one of those things, but he does seem like a really honest guy. He likes to tell it like it is, which is fun when you are getting interviews, you are getting personalities. Even showing personality this week, because we do have like the top 125, top 200 on the PGA Tour. A lot of that came down to the wire on the Korn Ferry Tour as well. We were talking about this before we got on, like David Skins had to win to get into the top 25, won, got into 24. What was it you read about it? Because I kind of missed something. And then
he's been trying to get his card apparently for 16 years. He was working DoorDash, which is like the Uber Eats, I guess, in the US for eight months ago. And he's officially now got his PGA Tour card. I mean, that is insane. The most insane part of that is 16 years of nonstop grinding.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some Monday Qs and some local AM qualifiers to get in the US Open or whatever. But 16 years of grinding. Obviously, the guy had jobs, you know, to pay through life, because, you know, we all know that mini tour stuff that's a proper grind. But you're working DoorDash and now you're a PGA Tour player. The guy's gone from delivering tacos at 2 a.m. to hopefully flying private jets in 3 years.
I know. And then see, I think this is where golf, I think F1 does a really good job of this. And I know a lot, this is not an original take by me by any means. Right. And I mean, even in the Olympics, right? Like we had the Olympics on and they had a playoff for the bronze medal, right? Like they don't just focus on the win. They focus on everything else around it. I don't think the tour does a great job of telling the narrative of like what a third place is worth. They do, I mean, this tournament is obviously like one that they cover very well. Korn Ferry Finals is something they cover very well. But in general, like, you know, what is a fifth place to somebody beyond a check? Right. And I think in some cases that falls down to the players because we don't get a lot of personality sometimes. And again, this is definitely not an original take by any means, but when you have like two F1 drivers sitting next to each other, I think we had Max and Lewis a couple of weeks ago after the one crash or something like that, like the first lap. Right. And they have to sit next to each other and answer questions about it. And, you know, I'm sure they had it like had conversation, but like, you're not going to get Brooks and Bryson sitting next to each other answering interview questions, right?
No.
And to frame it, like to tell the story of like, you know, George Russell, who's a driver for Williams, who's like, I wouldn't say is one of the top teams, but just for him to get into the top 10 was like such a massive step for him. And like, they talked about it after the race, they interviewed him. He's like crying, he's emotional because like what it means. And we saw that from Chesson Hadley today, 34 years old, his first hole in one ever, final round on the PGA Tour. And did you see the celebration? He must have got 8 feet off the ground when he jumped.
Yeah, I saw some photos from when he jumped. To be honest with you, I've said this. We've got a running joke at the club when we get up to a par three because we played with a group that a guy got a hole in one a couple weeks ago and had to Uber home after that one. But he, you know, we've all joking around said, like, if I get a hole in one, you guys are getting COVID or no COVID, you guys are getting hugged like no tomorrow and literally sprinting to the green. And there's been a couple close calls this year, but it's just one of those. I don't blame him. I would go absolutely bonkers. It would be unreal.
I would go nuts. Like I've never had one. Me neither. Ever.
I've been ridiculously like almost painfully close this year. More, and it's been three times. And the first time it happened this season, the two guys that I play with, they still to this day say that I did make a hole in one because we used to use those quarter cups. And just the way it hit anyways, it wasn't a hole in one. It was a very easy birdie putt. So, oh well.
That's funny. I know like, I've never had one. I know on social media this week, he has talked about it for a long time, but Shane Bacon, finally got his first hole in one.
Yeah, it was like 37 years, 20 days. And like, yeah.
I know he was like counting money in a jar or something. Every time he played, he put $5 in this jar until he finally like made a hole in one, and he's going to donate it all to charity or something kind of cool. But I remember like I've seen two of them. Both of them were at professional golf events. One was at St. George's at a Canadian Open. The other one was at Hamilton Golf and Country Club at a Canadian Open. And they were both like really good shots, like kind of like hop in, which is kind of sick to see.
Yeah.
And I remember I've never seen like an amateur get one, like just kind of like in a normal round of golf. But I did see my dad when I was a kid, like knock like a 5-wood on this par 3 off the stick and down. And this was like one of my first years playing golf. And I didn't know that wasn't like a thing that happened all the time. He was like pumped. And I was like, okay, like that seemed pretty good. Like you do this all the time, realizing like this is not normal.
So quick, like 30-second story. My dad and I are up at a club in the Muskokas here called Rocky Crest. My dad's ultimate favorite golf course. If he can play Augusta tomorrow, he will come back and tell you that his favorite golf course is Rocky Crest. Anyways, there's a long par 5. You have to hit over the Canadian Shield. It like falls off like 60 feet to the left side. The par 5 might play like 590 yards, right? Even from his tee, it's still pretty long. Bunts it down the fairway. He's made like an 8. Right? A 9. I don't even know what he's made, but he's so pissed off, like fuming. Get to the next hole. The wind is howling like maybe 20 miles an hour into the face. It was only playing like 160 yards. And he's like, you know what? He's like, I'm just going to hit a 3 hybrid. He goes, I know it's too much club, but I'm just pissed off. It's me, my dad, and a good family friend. Sure enough, he hits it. And it's like, we can actually, it's a little like downhill, but it's all force carry. And we watch this ball sail through the wind. And he never pauses with his swing. He's pausing with his swing and we all go silent. And honestly, I'm not kidding you. As soon as he hit the ball, the wind stopped and it got weirdly quiet. It hit in front of the pin and went dropped in. And it was just like, for a second, we didn't even know what was going on. And then went absolutely nuts on it. So you're right, to see a hole in one go in is pretty special, but yeah, stuff like that is crazy. I need to make one. It needs to happen. I'm gonna manifest it and it will happen soon, because I manifest to get an invite to play a certain golf course and it happens. So I'm not gonna jinx it, but it's a work in progress. So manifest your hole in ones, folks. You'll get hole in ones.
Well, you know, very similar story. And the only reason I'm saying this is because I'm looking right across from it, and it is my wife's hole in one plaque from King's Riding, which is another course, like let's call it in the GTA. And same thing, she was playing, and this is she's told me the drive was not there. Played terrible on the hole before, didn't even tee the ball, just threw it down on the tee, hit a 9-iron. What was it, 104 yards? And the starter had just pulled up before. So like the person was on the golf course there seeing this, like witnessing as well with, I think she was playing with her mom and dad, and plunk, plunk in. She was like, oh my God. And so she holds that against me because I've never had one. And because I offered to put it in my little golf room here, it's sitting up on the shelf and I'm constantly reminded of it for fun. But one day, Mike, one day we'll get there. So
one day I just need to stick to making pars. That's the most important right now.
So like, now we talked about Kisner winning. There's something really interesting about his bag, and you know it sticks out very obviously. Even like I know Kevin Na was in the playoff as well. He's finally switched out from the original Epic driver, I believe. He's got one of the new, I think it's one of the Triple Diamond models in the bag. But Kisner's got one of the original sets of Apex irons, and I know we both know Johnny Wonder from World of Wonder Callaway Golf. Check it out. All kinds of inside stuff from anything that's Callaway. That's the place to check it out. And he said, like, this is the last set. Like, he's gone through a number of these things. This, unless he starts buying them on eBay a la Daniel Berger, this is the last set of Apex irons that he's going to get. And he has to move on to something else. And, you know, I get questions all the time. I'm sure you get questions all the time, but like switching irons out.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of one of those things. If it's not broken, don't fix it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just read the whole playoff kind of recap, and it was like, you know, on the 18th hole, he stuck it to 3 feet. I mean, a lot of those guys can stick it to 3 feet, but in a playoff, there's even more pressure, and, you know, that's his fourth PGA Tour win. I mean, if you're comfortable with something, you know, it's the old saying, if it ain't broke, Why fix it?
Yeah.
And you hear that a lot with people's like fairy woods. You find a fairy wood, it's going to be almost the, that little, I don't know, that sacred gem that you just don't want to get rid of. So if that's what it takes to play your best golf, yeah, you don't have to change clubs every year or every 3 or 4 years. If you like something, I mean, how many old sets of clubs do you have?
I would prefer not to count at the moment. I actually don't have a specific count, but I definitely have, I think, close to 20 sets of irons. Now, that includes some like really, really old like Hogan stuff. And actually, I played this week. We'll touch on this a little bit in the question and answer. But I brought out one of the, I almost got out hipstered on the golf course. I had like my little push cart with like 7 clubs. And this other guy I got paired up with late evening round. I just kind of decided to go to the golf course. Had this like little pencil bag with like 6 clubs in it as well. And like the kind of the joggers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, it's like they've pitted us against like the two hipster golfer who's gonna come out on top.
That's funny.
And he had an iron, just like an iron off the first tee, and then I pulled out my like wooden club. And I hit it and he goes, is that painted wood or is it actually? And I said, no, it's actually like a wooden golf club. And so I think I won the hipster kind of battle just because of the old like wooden stuff. But he was a fun guy to play with. And it was kind of, we talked about, because he had some really, like he had some older stuff, some newer stuff. And it is like, if you got something, stick with it. And I go out with all kinds of like odd junk to play golf with just for fun.
100%.
So, and especially with irons too, right? If you're creating the proper descent angle and these PGA Tour player swings, as much as coaching and all these things do change, they're not changing so much where like they're losing or gaining a ton of speed. Other than Bryson, one of the other players that I know gained a lot of speed this year was Dylan Fratelli.
Yeah.
You see, he's jumped up a ton. And so like those kind of little things, they're not tweaking a lot. And if they know their distances, they're not going to mess with it. That's why they don't like changing golf balls. You'll see guys use generations old golf balls from all number of manufacturers just because they like the flight. I think it was at one point Bernard Langer was using one of like the super old Pro V1s.
Yeah.
And he was using a Nike ball, like Nike balls, in practice rounds because he found that they were the closest at whatever it was at some point, whatever model it was, I don't remember, but he was using those just so he could stockpile. He's like, I'm done these like 12 dozen for competitive golf. Like I'm done.
That's funny.
Just to hold on to them, which is nuts. So yeah, it was a busy week in professional golf, kind of went all over the place there, but let's get into some question and answers. Cause okay. I got a lot from this week. Actually, okay. I got a ton from, I put it out earlier. I know I put it out on our YouTube page or on Instagram, the official TXG, just for video ideas all the time. And one of the ones I think it came up in the live last week and I've had it a number of times is hard stepping and soft stepping. Mm. Can you explain what it is and why you would do it? Because to me, that is something that I get asked a lot about and it's really easy to explain, but I think for some golfers, it can be pretty confusing.
Yeah. I find it's easy to explain, but I find when some people explain it, they don't actually go into detail of what it actually does. So if you're going to hard step something, you're going to take a designated iron shaft. So your 6 iron is going to go into your 5 iron, and then soft stepping, you're going to go 5 iron into the 6 iron because the step pattern gets a little higher. Now it can play for 2 things. It can play for flex, but it can also play for weight. There's a lot of people that do, I don't know if a lot of people do it, but there's tiger stepping in wedges. And that's putting 8 iron shafts into your, call it 52, 56, 60. And that higher step, it's going to play a little bit softer and should add, a little bit different ball flight and shafts don't spin, but the way the club is delivered and stuff like that, you pick up a little bit of spin. And it's almost like I play the original DG spinner. DG spinner to me feels like an 8 iron shaft. And basically I'm just playing a little bit softer, but still maintaining a certain weight. That's why I do technically soft step my wedges. So that's probably a very brash Colds note of soft stepping and hard stepping, but we see it more now in fits with, believe it or not, with more like the AMT stuff. So obviously we have the ability in AMT, it's already preset, but to make it play a little softer or a little bit lighter in wedges, we can use we can soft step once, or we can play with different shafts and stuff like that. So I know on builds the last couple, I'll call it last couple months, because we don't see it all the time, we've had a couple soft step, hard step sets, which is nice to see. It means the fitters are really thinking even more and you know, understanding what the positives and negatives and how it's going to make that player a better player.
Yeah. And it's like a lot of times to exactly your point, it's a feel thing. I think there's no hard number on it, but I know the very general rule is like, it's like 1/3 of a flex. Yeah. If everything else stays the same from the club's perspective, you get a little bit softer, a little bit firmer. You're not going to see a huge change in spin, but you might feel the difference to the player. And if it's like, when we say designated, that's like a taper shaft is basically like you have a 9-iron shaft, 8-iron shaft, pitching wedge shaft, whatever it happens to be, 5-iron shaft. And you can do the same with parallel, which are all the same. And you as the builder cut from the tip first to create the flex and then go from there. So you can play with flex all you want. Like a perfect example of this, and I believe he still does it, is Jim Furyk. I'm throwing an old, I mean, talking about Bernard Langer and Jim Furyk tonight. Like we're going old school stuff, but Jim Furyk played regular flex KBS Tour shafts, but they were tipped firmer. So they were like closer to an R plus or closer to a stiff, and they were hard stepped a lot, but they were also like, I think it's roughly 10 grams between each flex and the KBS line. So he got lighter, but he got stiffer. So all of these little things are just for tweaking when it comes to the hard and soft stepping. And that's what it is. You know, you make a club play a little bit firmer into flex or softer to flex, depending on where you put those shafts. And the 6-5 hard, 5-6 and carry on from there is soft stepping. So hopefully we cover that for those people that have asked the question, because I know we get it a lot. And actually, I really like your explanation of that, Mike. That was good. So do you have one now, or am I going to fire off another one here?
I'm going to get you to fire them off tonight, because I have almost taken a little sabbatical from the whole social media game the last week, just busy with some stuff. So you fire away and I will help and answer.
All right. So another one that I've gotten again recently is about the line goals on wedges. Mm-hmm. It's a common one. I know we touch on it a lot. I feel like there's a lot of times where I'll mention it and then people ask again after the fact. And because you're the wedge guy, Mike, I'll take the next one. Because you're the wedge guy, can you explain to the people why a flatter wedge is so helpful when it comes to, you know, dialing in not just ball flight, but the shots you might hit?
For me, I always say like wedges being a little bit flatter, you sometimes stand a bit closer to it. You hit certain little finesse shots. Being a little bit flatter can help the ball run up the face a bit more, can potentially for some get the heel out of the ground. And you can, you know, almost clip that ball a little bit cleaner. I had a conversation with a customer on the weekend about this. I personally play my 60 degree 4.5 degrees to 5 degrees flatter than my 56. And that was again mentioned by Gareth Rafluski at one point. And it has changed my chipping and pitching game with a 60 around the green. I use a 60 degree a lot. So something a little bit flatter to me just helps give a little bit more room on the face. The shot feels a little bit clippier to me. And with that better friction off the face, the spin increases as well.
Yeah. I think the shots around the green is something that is such a huge part of it, right? Because, you know, people don't really, I find a lot of golfers don't really think too much about the wedge lie angle. And they buy a wedge because a driver comes in a specific loft. You can't change the lie angle. They might, you know, change the loft a little bit. Sorry. You can change it technically, but most people think about the loft and they're not really thinking about what that's going to affect, because it doesn't really, because there's not that much loft on it. But once you go flatter, once you have so much loft on the club, your launch direction can really start being affected by the lie angle. And, you know, I've talked to so many players like, I pull all my wedges. I'm like, did you just buy them stock? It's like, yes. When I play my irons, what, 1 degree flat, 2 degrees flat, whatever it happens to be. I know we try not to use upright or flat. We try and use a number when we're doing a build or a fit, but from the general speak, those are the things that people don't realize. And then they wonder why they can't chip the ball. You have good players who are like, you know, intermediate golfers that are decent players, and they put a wedge in their hand, they can't chip. And it's literally because the lie angle. or they're trying to hit pitch shots and they just yank everything and they have no idea why. So yeah, I actually answered 100 questions on Instagram this, I think it was Friday night. So I was firing through them. And this is one that I know we get a lot about. There's a lot of conversation about this. We are lucky at TXG because we have access to GC Quad. We are always using GC Quad when it comes to fitting. I know our man Ian was out just in the short game area a few weeks ago, just showing off with kind of like some spin stuff on his Instagram. Being able to have that out is a huge benefit. I know for myself, I just have currently, although I do have, you know, access to the quads like everyone else, a PRGR, which helps with ball speed and club head speed. So for me, I use it just for that tool. I don't really worry about the distances too much. It's never a big concern. But the question was, how do these monitors, something like, say, a Mevo or a Mevo Plus or the Rapsodo was the kind of example the person asked about, how do they actually help someone play better golf? And the simple answer is data.
It
comes down to being able to understand what is going on with your golf ball. This doesn't mean getting lessons. I mean, they're always helpful. They can always be very helpful. But it's all about knowing what happens when you hit a golf ball and knowing your dispersion when you hit a golf ball. And if you have the opportunity to use one of their apps, I know I've had the chance to use the Rapsodo a little bit before. I did have a lot of time testing the Mevo Plus, as well as a little bit of time with the Mevo, is if you just have your distances, if you just know your distances and you go to the golf course, you can feel confident making swings. And I think that's where a lot of people really struggle. And it doesn't mean you have to lock in your spin rates. It doesn't mean you have to know all these like kind of crazy statistics. But if you're able to go to a golf course and you have your, and that's why these guys pull their launch monitors out every time they go to a golf course, is because, and sometimes they'll use a radar based and a photo based because they want to know the exact carry with the radar, but they want some other club data as well, or ball data, or whatever it is from the picture one. And so because of that, like, I know, I can't remember, I had this conversation a little while ago, but there was one player on the European Tour, and he was like the first guy, he was not a long hitter, but he basically, the only thing he did to this TrackMan before every round of golf was he'd warm up, he'd put it down, and he'd hit his like pitching wedge, 50 degree and sand wedge full, just to see like whatever my swing is doing today, I want to know my distances. Yeah. And he would try and lay up to those distances. Now, I'm not saying everybody's going to do that every time before they go and play, but if you just have this information where you are getting, even for the amateur golfer, and I personally, I'm talking about myself here. If you know your carry distances within 5 yards, you are going to be so much more consistent on the golf course and be able to make good decisions. Because when you make good decisions, you're able to work your way around a golf course better, and over a course of a round of golf, shoot lower scores, which is
100%.
It sounds silly. It's like why we talk about Arcos, more data. I use Arcos. I'm a fan of it. I bought into the system. I pay my membership. And like the reason I use it is because it helps me. You know, it's not just so I can share a screen cap of me hitting a drive however far. I don't care about that. When I go after the round, I'm looking at strokes gained and looking at where I missed. And I don't think about it, but I played rounds of golf where, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, where like you finish, you're like, I felt like I putted well.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, but it's because I missed a lot of greens and I chipped it good. So I hit it closer. Like all of these things add up, and then you have the information. That to me is like the biggest element of being able to play better golf. So any of these little mini launch monitors, if you are getting information that's going to help you know your distances, that is what the benefit is to any golfer. Anyone at all, regardless of skill level. I got another one here, as you can imagine. And I will shout out too, before we get to the next one, is if you're curious about Titleist golf balls, I know we do not have a sponsor for the show, but they had this really great post on their Instagram. I think they posted on Twitter as well, is the trajectories of their golf balls.
So smart.
Because I've had people ask like, what is the lowest spinning golf ball? Or what is the higher spinning golf ball? And I know our friends over, because again, this is an older show from a while back. I know the team over at My Golf Spy has just completed. I know they will be soon. They've kind of teased it on their social, some of the ball test stuff that they're going to be doing soon, and like their big actual like hitting test and things like that. And, you know, the lower spinning ball from Titleist, for example, is an AVX, which also flies lower. And the higher spin balls or the higher flight balls are generally going to be like the lower compression stuff because of the dimple pattern and because of just the way they react off of certain golf clubs. Yeah. We tested those off the, we just did the E12 nice. Contact at TXG. We can check that out. I've actually got the original. Listen to this. This is cool. I know you're not going to get the visual, Mike, and I realize that, but I got this cool little display box. You know, this is like the, what is it called? The YouTube unboxing without any of the actual picture here. When I open this little box that they send, it has this little screen and everything in it. So as I open it,
stairways just got wider.
It has like a little television in the box. So yeah, it's this cool little display box.
Tiger in that one?
Yeah, if I leave the box open and you want to sit and do a whole Bridgestone commercial, you do get Tiger Woods in it, which is kind of cool.
Worth every penny.
I've kind of held on to this little fun thing. But
I don't think I've ever played a Bridgestone ball. You know what? I probably bought a dozen of the Tiger Woods ones, but I've never played a Bridgestone ball. I'm sure they're great.
I talked about this a little while ago when just before it was actually funny before Ian and Matt did the recent E12 test was I was in my garage and I had the ball at the little launch monitor thing set up. Right. And as it had basically been proven at this point, the firmer the golf ball, the more ball speed you're going to get out of it. Right. You know, if you hit a stress ball off a baseball bat and you hit a golf ball off a baseball bat, the golf ball is going to go further. And that's obviously like an extreme example, but I was hitting these golf balls in my garage and I hit them a lot into my net, which, you know, and I was looking at the ball speed and I was like, doesn't really translate. Like the smash is a little bit lower. My speed is up. I got an idea. So I went downstairs, went in and grabbed, I had this little two ball pack of the Tour VX golf ball, which is one of the firmest golf. I'm not going to say that it is the firmest golf ball on the market, but it definitely is the firmest ball in the Bridgestone lineup. And so I was like, okay, I want to see what happens to ball speed here. And just plunk, 4 more miles an hour.
Crazy.
And I thought, well, first of all, I'm using older golf balls. I've hit them a lot in my garage. So there's probably some deterioration there. Like I've been using the same 15 golf balls since the winter time. As soon as I got the new ones out, noticeable difference. And I think this is why when you are picking a golf ball, like, do you play the same golf ball all the time?
Yeah.
What is it, Mike? You going to tell us? You going to tell the people?
Pro V1X. I've played Pro V1X for quite a long time. I've been back and forth between that and the Strixon, but for the last two seasons, I've been back to, you know, Pro V1X.
Yeah. I really like the Strixon around the short game because of the, whatever, the spin skid or some whatever it's called.
Yeah.
I always liked how it did really feel like it was grabby on like the little half pitch shots. I thought was really cool. I think this is where when people are messing with golf balls, if you're a high handicapper and you lose a lot of golf balls, you know, buy a direct to consumer ball if it's cheaper, right? Like if your main focus is just price, if you're using the same golf ball every time, and this comes back to the whole data thing, you'll at least know your distances.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you use a two-piece, you know, soft compression, two-piece ERC Chrome Soft from Callaway. Like, it doesn't really matter. But if you're using that and you're switching between that and, like, the Chrome Soft X or something like that, right? Or Tour Soft. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of Soft and Tour and Ball and all kinds of names out there. I get very confused all the time. And when people ask the question, I often have to look up what the name of the actual golf ball is. Cause I'm like, it's the low spin or the high spin one kind of thing. But if you go from one to the other, you can see especially if we're talking like a club, you really want to carry a certain yard. Say it's like a 5-iron or it's a 5-hybrid or it's a 5-wood or something like that. Right. Where carry distance can really mean make or break if you're going over something. And all of a sudden, you know, trajectory gets 15 or 20 more feet in the air off a solid strike. It comes up short. It spins more. Yeah. And you're like, what happened? Like, I made a good shot. It's like, well, yeah, but you change your golf ball, man. Like that's the problem. So it is a consistency thing. So as far as the charts go, the OEMs do a great job. All the ball manufacturers do a great job. They are a much better resource than I am. That's why I wanted to mention the Titleist thing, because unless you're doing a full ball fitting, that is definitely the way to go. Do you have anything crazy that was built this week, Mike, in the shop? You got anything cool? Cause I'm trying to build a P790 driving iron right now just for fun.
Let's see. What's cool? What's cool? Another set of concepts out the door. I got some new product photos. Probably can't talk about yet.
I can just imagine all the stuff that's on that phone of yours, Mike, when it comes to golf club pictures.
Don't really get asked to do this often. You can see it, but I did some of that dot stamping on some wedges for a guy, which was pretty cool. I wrote the word Theo in there.
You know what I did? An alarm clock?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the old school alarm clock. That's cool. I've done a couple of those, and I've seen ones where you actually stamp in all of the digits, like all of the things, and then you just paint in.
That's sick.
You're doing it. I've only done it with initials. So like I didn't go through the whole process because that's a whole freaking like effort to do that kind of stuff. But I know for myself, actually, I'm really excited. Shout out to a friend of mine, Peter. The gentleman runs a really cool like organization that helps organize persimmon events. And I didn't run it by him, so I'm not going to use his last name right now. But to Peter, thank you. I just picked up I want to call them Mike Taylor grinds. They're not technically they are, but some more Nike Engage raw wedges.
Nice.
I got a dual sole 60, which I already have one of those, which should be no surprise. But I got the full sole 56.
Oh yeah.
Because I've only ever had the 54 full sole. I've never had a 56 and I got a 50. So I do have a 52, but now I'll have a 52, an extra 56 and a 60 just for fun to mess around with. Cause like there's something about those old Nike wedges that are just awesome and they're raw. So for me, it's kind of like my go-to.
I am still on the hunt for a 60. The high toe is, on its way out. It's been fun, but, I've got a game tomorrow that I have to play, and I'll be looking at new wedges tonight in the basement. See what we can bring out of the wedge cellar. We've got a wine cellar and a wedge cellar in this house.
Now, here's one for you, because I'm really curious because I've never asked you this, and we haven't tried to. I'm going to spring this one on you, anyways. When it comes to the 60 degree. Why is it difficult for you to find one? And B, what is it that like you don't have to use the high toe as the example, but if you were to say one thing that made you not want to use that one to continue, was there a shot that you hit? Was it a feel? Was it a soul thing? What was it that made you go from I want to try it, I like it, but it's not the one? We had a great first day, we had a great conversation, yeah. But this isn't going to the second date. Like what is
it? I put high toe in when it first came out originally, loved it, came from an Artisan 60 that was really built for like, what was it built for? It was built for Bermuda grass. So it didn't work 100% here. I put my own little grind on it, still didn't really do the trick. So went to the ATV high toe, liked it, put it away after a year, put in the RTX 60 zip core. This time last year, or maybe a couple months before that, loved it. And then for some reason, I got some wedges sent to me over the winter and I was going to use them and never put the RTX back in. I think I gave the RTX away to a friend. And then I put the high toe back in the bag and it didn't feel the same. So Fraz was like, take the ATV out and use the 7 degrees of bounce. And as I started using that at the club, I play 90% of my golf at my home club. We have around our greens, they're pretty like small flat greens, but around them is just shaved surrounds. So if you're off it, it's just low, kind of like a couple feet below the green. And you have to hit these little spinner shots that I'm normally comfortable hitting, but for some reason just can't get that feel with the high toe that I used to have. And I think I've bent this high toe to like 64 degrees now, and it still just doesn't sit properly. So it's a turf interaction thing. And I'm not a huge divot taker. I've been hitting this 60 degree full a lot because it's like 85 yards to 90 yards perfect for me, which I don't really need, but if I need it, I have it. And I'm taking pelts of turf that I never take before. They spin like crazy, but I know like taking a divot's fine. I actually don't like taking a big divot. Ruins the golf course. And it feels awful to me. So I've got an old 60 Vokey tee grind in the basement that might need to get washed tonight before I play tomorrow. Cause it's just something I don't know what the feel is that I'm exactly looking for. But I need to figure something out. I've seen some new wedges that come out next year and I potentially might just order one already.
I know the 60 is a very interesting one because it is so unique to every player. Like for, I don't have a 60, but I have a 58 and I do not take full swings of it.
Yeah.
I might hit like a 50 yard, just, I'm going to hit it really hard and I'm going to spin the hell out of it. Like I'm taking all the loft off this thing and launching it low and spinning it a lot. Which is why I like the ES Mizuno because it is.
So that wedge is unreal. ES 21. I potentially might sneak in the shop tomorrow morning before my round and take it out for a test drive because I've been hitting balls with it indoors and like you can hit it one hand. Like I'll be on a phone call, have my AirPods in, and I'm literally hitting these like little hip to hip one handed wedge shots with this ES wedge. You sell them to customers and they're like, I was like, my first thing is like, listen, this thing doesn't look great. It looks a little ugly, but just put it in a dress position and hit it. And people are like, I freaking love this thing. Then the performance is there. They spin like nuts. That's a great wedge. Maybe call our old buddy, Chris Caldwell.
I wasn't trying to do a wedge fitting here, but yeah, I know for me, it's like, I like a lot of camber because I do open it up, but I don't want a lot of bounce. So like, you know, it's kind of this mid sole. It's not really thin. It's not really wide. Has a lot of camber. It's very rounded. Normally I would grind a wedge like this. I would probably take a little bit more off it, but because of it, it's hollow and I'm just like, I like the finish on it. I'm not really going to mess with it. And it seems to be working. So again, harping back to the beginning of the show, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. And I think too, like a lot of people probably the millions of people listening to this podcast are probably thinking like, why don't you just go get fit? And you're right. I could just go get fit. I could go see any one of my fitters and go get fit. But being a bit of a wedge nutcase, there's just certain things that I'm looking for that I like to think of in my head without actually hitting stuff. And that's why your Sunday morning start or your Sunday night start with text messages to Aaron Dill asking him questions about wedges. When the guys that work in the playoffs and helping guys win millions of dollars. But it's just like, there's a great book by Cleveland called Wedgeocation or something like that. Maybe I've made that word up. Anyways, it's a great book. And literally I'll go through it and like highlight stuff and then go, okay, I'm going to try that. And I'll take a blank wedge or I'll take an old wedge, take it to the buffing wheel, shaft it up, take it to the club, hit it and be like, okay, I can feel with that certain grind or how that shape is working for me. So a wedge fitting, yes, works, but a wedge fitting for me would work if I can really run back and forth and just like, I might have 30 wedges that are just blanks, but they have like some of the stupidest grinds on them. But I'm just trying to like figure out why, what am I exactly looking for? So I don't know, my 60 degree, it's, you know, sadly it's coming close to the end of the season. We've probably got a few months left, but I've got some important golf coming up that I need to really figure out the 60 degree. I probably need a little bit of a short game tune-up lesson. This year has been a lot more of the pitching and chipping with the 50 degree and 56 degree, but I think I need a bit of a lesson.
I did that a while ago, like a couple of years ago. I just gone to like the 54, 50 degree chipping.
So smart. It's the best.
And it really changed like how, because again, most of the golf course I play, you can hit these run up shots. I try not to short side myself. Then the 58 comes out, the lob wedge comes out, but it is like partially the decision-making process. And also that feel around the greens. Like I know I had this funny experience with Johnny Wonder again. This was a couple of years ago now, the PGA show, we were down there. I had this wedge. And it was a TaylorMade full sole mill grind, original mill grind with the raw face. So at the time it was pretty new. I think it had come out in the fall. So I had it for like a month or two and it was a 56 and I bent it to 59.
Yeah.
So we're talking, this is a full sole wedge. There's really not a lot of camber front to back or side to side on this thing. And it had, I think it's a 12 or 13, I think it was a 12 degrees of bounce. Which is more like reality, like they're giving you an effective bounce. I bent it. So it's got 15 degrees of bounce, full sole. It's super flat, like mega flat. Johnny season's in my bag. We're down in Florida. Bermuda, like this, like just grabby rough, right? Takes it over to the short game area and he starts hitting. I can see him. He's hitting these little flop shots with like range balls, like kind of like two piece low compressions range balls. And they're coming down so soft, like they're not spinning back or nothing, but like they're hitting and they're landing soft. And I'm thinking, okay, well, he looks like he's liking it. Like it's kind of cool. I mean, I've hit it a couple of times. I mean, there's a reason I have it in my bag right now. And he comes over and goes, what the hell did you do to this wedge? I said, well, that 50, he goes, this is the highest flying 56 I've ever hit. And I said, well, it's because it's a 59 degree and it has the sole, it just has a whack load of bounce. It's not overly wide, but it has a lot of bounce. So you could really fire it into this like thicky kind of like tangled grass and it just wants to get down and up and you can do it with speed and do it very confidently. And, you know, if he had tried that same wedge, if he had pulled that wedge out on a course with like bent grass around it that was tight and he tried to hit that shot, he might have sculled three in a row and put it right back in the bag and been like, this is a dumb wedge.
Yeah.
But there is such a thing to feel and the turf conditions that I don't think a lot of people really think about. And, you know, to exactly your point, I'm crazy as well. I do have a lot. Anytime I go to the range, I usually bring like five or six wedges, just like a 54, just to see if there's anything different this time. You know, what happens? What happens with this wedge today? Yeah. It rained a lot. Let's try that out. So it's always very interesting. So, you know, you crushed it at the Olympics, Mike. You picked the winner for the women. I'm going to ask you now, cause you're on a roll. Let's see if we can nail down the hot streak before we roll out of here. Do you have a winner for the Women's British Open? Can you think of someone who's going to go out there and take the win?
Lydia Ko.
Yeah.
I don't know. She played well today. I just saw some highlights and stuff like that. She played decently well. She looks like she's hitting a ton of hybrids, but she's like hitting these feathery. They just showed literally five shots that she hit onto these, you know, these greens that are probably a bit more receptive than what Carnoustie will be. But it's been wet and not as sunny over there. So yeah, I mean, Carnoustie is going to be pretty green and soft. So I think Lydia Ko has a chance to hit some hybrids around that place. And, you know, when she putts well, she's a great ball striker. That's my pick for the women's British Open or the women's Open, British Open, yeah. Open.
You kind of kicked my feet out from underneath me, Mike. I was going to pick Lydia for the same reason, been playing well, but also if there's any wind, she won the Lodi or the Latte Championship in Hawaii. And it was windy there. Mm. And she came down this, like basically played lights out golf. I know it was a resort golf course. They were like 20 something under par. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you know, complete and utter tangent. Every time I see that, I think to myself, okay, they play four rounds of golf. They're literally birding one of every four holes they play. Like that's just any professional golf. When you see at least 18 under, it means that, I mean, there's eagles and whatever, right? But like to make that many birdies is absolutely freaking insane.
Nuts.
So I will digress back to what I was talking about. I was going to pick Lydia, but since I can't pick Lydia and you have already, I'm not going to take Nelly. I feel like it's going to be the easy pick. I would say Imbi, but I don't know. Imbi, I find like on Lynx Golf is might not be like the best pick. Pick Yuka.
It's a good pick.
Pick Yuka Sasso. I think she's got the game. Obviously, like won earlier this year, and I think for her, that's my pick. I'm going with that. I just think if you get it on Lynx Golf Course, you can get some draw, which is always interesting, right? Like, I know the draw this week, a lot of people talked about it at Oakmont for the amateur, because there was like a three almost four shot differential between the like the first round and the second round, because there was rain the second one. So like you had, it was like 70s, it's almost like 78 and then like 75 or 74. Like it was insane, right? So if you were in the draw that was playing Oakmont the first round, like that's a tough go. Like there was, I think, one player under par of all the people that played that day to get into like just for the medal play. You had to go through like, I don't know, it was like burnt out. I was talking to Keenan from True Temper. He was out there. They were servicing some of the players with shafts and just like kind of talking through stuff. And I said, what was Oakmont like? And he goes, man, and he actually, I think he put it out on Twitter as well. He's like, I wouldn't, because I'm a legit 5 handicap and I do not feel like I would break 95. He goes, I wouldn't say it. He goes, in these conditions, he goes, if I broke 100, I would feel like I was playing good almost, because like you, there's the landing area is so small, the golf course is playing so fast. And you know, that is why when you mentioned earlier, like this is, I mean, it is a major, but like it's an amateur major, but like you have to play some seriously freaking ridiculous golf through medal play and match play all the way through, maybe get a couple breaks along the way to win that golf tournament. And no, that's what we got to see this week.
Not just saying it because I've played it, but I think Oakmont could be the best US Open venue.
You like it? That is your favorite?
Because it's so tough. Like it's tough. I was playing, I didn't even play off US Open tees. It wasn't even US Open condition or US Am condition. It was in really good condition. But I mean, it's just hard and the caddies know their stuff. And there's not a single, there's like one tree on the golf course and you feel like you've been whacked through a forest half the time. but it's great. Yeah. It's a really good spot. It looked great on TV this week.
I would love to see it. This is like the big hipster take, but like, I'd love to see it back at Chambers Bay to see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that, you had Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, 3-putted the last hole. Like Brandon Grace was playing well. I think it was 17, the par 3, where he blew it out into the train tracks or whatever it was. Like, you had a lot of good players coming down the stretch there. And I don't know if it was because I know the greens, there was like the POA and all, like they were just, people crapped on it. Right. But at the end of the day, like the best player in the world at the time won, and you had one of the other best players in the world who came second. So again, you can use the field argument if you want, but at the end of the day, you saw an entertaining golf tournament. I think Chambers was a pretty cool one. So Mike, great chat as always. You know, we answered some questions. I feel like we both kind of blabbered on. You got to talk about 6-3 wedges, always a favorite. And you know, I nerded out on a number of things. So
love it.
Actually, one more quick story before we go. I know I feel like this is like the fun thing, but so I had the little PRGR thing out because I posted this on social, and there was the guy that I was playing golf with, unassuming, tall guy, kind of reminded me of one of our fitters, John, tall, very athletic guy. And he was like, you know, I think he shot like 2 or 3 under par, like without even thinking on 9 holes. Like it was nuts. So I get this thing out. I'm hitting it because I'm watching his speed. You know, I'm doing my thing. And he gets up and he goes, can I try it? Like, he goes, what is that? I explained to him what it is. So he pulled another ball out of his bag. He was using a 2-piece, like whatever it was. He was using the same golf ball the whole time because he was using these purple golf balls. So maybe I dig it out, hipster. And he pegs it up. He's got a stock M3, I think it was, with like the red Atmos in it. So it was probably just a normal stiff flex off the rack. And I'm like, okay, like I'm really curious to see where this goes because I play with players that are like into the high teens in their swing speed. 128 swing speed, 180 ball speed. That's and insane. He goes, I've never been fit. Is that good? And I'm like, you have no freaking. He goes, how fast is default question, right? For a lot of players, completely understandable. How fast is Bryson?
Yeah.
I said, well, Bryson he's up there. His ball speed on course is like high 80s. You know, he talks about getting to the 200 if he's like really cooking and like his speed test or he's on the range or something like that. But I mean, 180 with a stock driver is insane. All I think of was we just chatted like a little bit and then we went right back to like, again, he didn't even like care, right? He was like, okay, that's cool. Like, I didn't know what that meant kind of thing. And all I could think of the whole time, like it was like one of our last holes. All I think was like, man, I'd love to fit this guy.
Yeah, no kidding.
I could just imagine but like again, he already hits it good. Like he's carrying the ball 300 yards. Like that was not an issue, right? But to see it and be like, just the optimization in my head, I'm like, this guy could crush it.
Yeah,
it was like crazy to see it. I think that's what when we have fitters and fitters see golfers come in and they've never gone through the fitting experience to you know bring it back to really what the excitement is when we talk about we kind of nerd out about golf equipment. It's because we see the potential other people have. And what we can offer to them. And I always think that's the really fun thing about it.
Love it. That's so sick.
So to everybody that has tuned in, thank you so much. If you haven't already, check out the Pinehurst Resort giveaway link. It's on the YouTube page. It's been posted on our social a number of times, so just check it out there. It's very easy to find. We put it everywhere. To the new listeners, thank you again. And Mike, always a pleasure to chat. You have a good week.
Have a good week.